Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today on the Roundup, we're going to be answering three questions we've been hearing from international educators over the last 7 days. And today, we're back in the home office for the first time in a few weeks after a lot of travel over the last month or two. And happy to be back chatting with you live with the old handy map in the background to remind us all of what industry we're in and the joy that we have in the places we get to visit around the world and interact with students and scholars from around the world. So today on the Roundup, as we do each week, we take the questions we ask from our newsletter that comes out on Mondays each week. You can subscribe to that on our website at smieconsulting.org/subscribe. I'm also going to drop the link to the email version as well as the LinkedIn version of that newsletter. And between the two of them, we now have over 1,850 subscribers. So really pleased by how many people are now making the midweek or the newsletter called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. And in case you're wondering, SMIE stands for Social Media and International Education. All those subscribers, grateful to you making us a part of your weekly international edification. And as we do each week, we take those the themes from several of the stories that we see in the newsletter on Mondays, and we talk about those here on Wednesdays in more depth. You get our hot takes on Monday on how those might impact what we do in international education. Here on Wednesdays, we go more in depth into three of those common themes that we see developing each week. So if you haven't already subscribed, you can do so through our website or through LinkedIn, whichever way you prefer. But we'll get straight to the questions of the week. And the first of the three questions is one that is near and dear to my heart, and it all has to do with communications with prospective students, international students. And we're leading with the question is, how and what should you be communicating to future students from overseas? And these are the kinds of questions that have to be foundational to what you do as an institution, as an international admissions institution. Every institution has a strategic plan. Every institution has values that they preach, translate into marketing messages for international students. All of these are part of what we do in international education. And that happens at the institution-wide level for domestic admissions, to alumni audiences, to other external audiences, but also to international students. Now, what do you need? How are you communicating, and what you are communicating are two very different things, obviously. The how is the tools and the platforms that you decide to pick to reach your intended audiences, and you have to ask yourself, are you on the right ones for the right audiences that you're targeting? You also want to know what kind of content your audience wants to hear. And there's a couple of articles that I'll be sharing with you here, first of which is from our friends at INTED. Their blog this past week was, "Did You Say Something? I've Already Scrolled On." So it's tips. The article really focuses on tips for how you can craft messaging for students, not only on the platforms that they're using, but also on the right devices that they're using. And we all know that our teens these days are glued to their devices, their phones typically, and that they, during 43% of their waking hours for U.S. teens is spent online, 7 hours, 22 minutes each day looking at screens. So that is another vendor, Common Sense, has stats that show teens are on their screens 8.5 hours per day outside of school-related screen time, which is an important distinction there. So those times are significant that they're on those devices and on different platforms, social platforms, messaging platforms that clearly are vital to their day-to-day lives. So do you have a presence on those platforms and have content that is designed to be readable on a mobile device, whether it's video content or short messages. Certainly, you don't want to be putting any long screeches of content onto digital platforms that students are going to be using on mobile devices. So you talk about the kinds of programs in terms of the how is those platforms and on designing content for mobile devices. The what is a very different topic altogether. And the what has to do with the video content that you might be using. For example, if you're into short form videos, which you should be if you're on TikTok or Instagram at all, that is what what posts typically gather the highest levels of engagement. ICEF Monitor has a piece this week, past week, called The Art of the Short Viral Video for International Student Recruitment. Excellent resource there. Talks about what makes sense for TikTok and Insta and in terms of the value of these kind of things. Is that getting on your future audience's For You page on TikTok or on the recommendations page on Insta, whatever it might be. But they give five tips in this ICEF Monitor article for reaching prospective students with short form video. Finding out first through research that you do what your competitors are doing when it comes to these kind of videos, what is trending, what kinds of videos are trending when you open up TikTok or Reels or Insta, whatever it might be, or on YouTube, short Reels, short form videos on YouTube as well. Look at the hashtags, the sounds, the music that is resonating in those Discover videos that are popping. You want to find out what's working in particular markets. And for international students, that's maybe a little bit harder to do to get that on the ground impact. But if you have an alumni network, if you have current students that have recently come to your institution from abroad in some of your key markets, doing focus groups with them to find out what's really popping on social media in their markets, their home markets, doing the TikTok challenges in certain markets if those are trending in your target countries, and engaging with influencers in that market to maybe get them to say something nice about your institution. Those are the kinds of things that you can do. Then it's an important part about these short viral video success tips is not to lecture. You don't want to be focus on really teaching them something necessarily or speaking at them. You want to try and become friends in terms of create a friendship-like relationship, as they say, with the fans, and commenting on what they say and re-engaging with them in that respect. So that's certainly a good advice there. Making sure you have a hook. And there's information in this article that Gen Z's attention span is down to 8 seconds. So that's the time you have to, in your first 8 seconds, to really grab their attention and potentially get them to watch the remaining 30, 60 seconds that you have left. A bold fact, sharing a secret, be shocking or surprising a little bit, a problem and hint at a solution that you might have, ask questions that viewers want the answers to. Those kinds of things are a good way to give it a hook, as they say. And finally, the last tip is to comment and encourage comments. And that's always good practice on social media is if someone comments on your stuff, you want to comment on what they say and thank them for their engagement and maybe take the conversation to another level. So great piece by ICEF Monitor on that in terms of helping identify the kinds of tips that will be useful to prospective students. Next one up is one from QS that talks about Gen Z and particularly Gen Z business school students and what's on top of their wish list. So if you're responsible for marketing to future MBA students or business school students, this is an article that might make sense for you to read as well. And this QS midweek brief report covers goes in depth into what COVID has done to Gen Z students and in terms of their expectations for university and what's coming in their careers and those types of things are going to be pretty important. But knowing what they want to hear is another important factor. And talking about topics like sustainability, equity, importance of problem solving, those are kind of things, effect on climate, all of those pieces of the puzzle are important messages that, in this case, from this QS article, that you would want to focus on in talking and meeting your audience where they are on topics that make sense to them. And ultimately, that's what every successful recruitment strategy is based around, is making connections with students on topics that they want to hear about, that they feel a connection with you as a result, that there is a reason why they want to pursue a relationship with your institution, or at least see where it goes. So there's some really strong, in these articles that we shared today, some really strong examples of what you can be doing in terms of the how you communicate and what you communicate with your future students as in making your approach to communication with your target audiences much more focused and much more on point for what they want to hear. Ultimately, that's what everyone hopes that their campaigns do. Their Comflows messaging happens, their social media posts, all of that. They hope that they're reaching students where they are on topics that matter to them. But how often do we find that out first before we design our messaging? It's often the other way around, isn't it? So let's move on to question two for the week. And that is, will the United States be number one forever and have 2 million international students by 2030? Now, it's no surprise that U.S. has been the number one destination for international students for many decades, since record-keeping really began. And the when I say number one forever, it's a little tongue-in-cheek. That may not be the case, but we have consistently been so. Other countries have gotten close in the last few years. Australia got close. Canada got close. The U.K. has gotten close. But look what's happened to them. In the last year, each of those markets... Okay, and there was even reports that Canada's numbers were pushing 1 million this year, this past year. And that kind of freaks a lot of us out in the United States. They only have 300 universities and colleges, and how are they able to manage 1 million international students? Well, look what 1 million international students did, if that's the case, to Canada. Housing shortages all across the country in major and metropolitan areas, as well as small towns that and universities that oversubscribed internationally to fund keep their doors open and fund expansion. Dozens of private colleges who survived on international students, where they were 60-70% international, are now in a very, and when I say private colleges there, I'm talking about vocational institutions primarily that aren't bachelor's degree granting institutions for the most part. The students that they're producing have typically been coming in and using their 2 or 3 year degrees as pathways to work and eventually residency and citizenship. Those doors have been closing, and much of the cap talk in Canada of the limit on to 325,000 or a 30% drop in the total numbers admitted to Canada for study permits in the next couple of years. A lot of those cuts are coming to those private colleges and some publics as well, who had significant public-private partnerships and had those to help fund a lot of their programs. So these public-private partnerships have taken a hit in Canada. The caps that have been put in place are going to be targeting those. Particularly as they're apportioned across the country, targeting those certainly significant cuts to the private colleges. You see in Canada also the rising of the minimum income funding that students needed to provide, going from $10,000 to $20,000. And the ones that had been benefiting from that lower amount, no matter where they were going, they had to prove at least $10,000, now are having double that amount in order to get a study permit. And those that were likely showing those minimum amounts were ones that are likely going to those public colleges. It's a very different demographic of, say, for example, Indian students going to Canada primarily for vocational study, as opposed to those coming to the United States, which for the lion's share, 70-80% in recent years have been coming for postgraduate study, master's degrees or doctoral programs. So that is an impact for Canada. In the UK, you've seen the net migration debate result in the dependent study visa ban, that unless you're coming for a PhD program in the United Kingdom, you cannot bring family with you. And as a result, those numbers in key markets, India, Nigeria, have tanked as well. Visa numbers are down 27% in the last year. So they are taking big hits. They might take an even bigger hit if the graduate route, which is their post-study work visa, gets fooled with at all or limited in any way, down to 6 months, I think it was, in when Theresa May first got rid of it in 2007 or 9, I think. So we see what's happening in other countries. Australia introduced the genuine student test, which again is targeting primarily vocational institutions in Australia as a way to minimize on net migration numbers, those that are coming for these low-paying jobs that are overqualified for the jobs, are the instant degrees that they're applying for, coming into vocational colleges and just using that as a path to work and residency. So the number one piece is coming in two different ways, really. It's coming from the existing data on current international students in the United States and other major markets, that the U.S. still has well over a million international students enrolled, and those numbers will only be increasing in the years to come. The two articles that I'm sharing first are from IIE, that has their 2030 outlook on what the numbers look like for international students in the United States. I heard this actually while I was in Thailand a couple weeks ago as part of a IIE International Academic Partnership Program, visiting universities in Thailand. The co-president of IIE, Jason Sizz, made several announcements about this, referring to this article from IIE about their Outlook 2030, that he said on several occasions during the trip in public settings with these university folks that the U.S. may have 2 million international students by 2030. That's 6 years away. That we could have 2 million international students, nearly doubling what we have now. That's a pretty significant jump if you think about it, and how long it took us to get to 1 million, that we could be doubling that in the next 6 years, potentially. So that's a pretty significant story, that we could potentially have 2 million international students in the United States. And you got to think about it. In Canada, in Australia, international students studying at the vocational level make up almost half, if not more than half, of the total international students studying there. In the United States, our vocational students, as a part of our million plus, are a very small fragment, less than 10% of our total students, probably less than 7%, I think. So in the United States, our post-secondary bachelor's, master's, doctoral level students that are in the United States are significantly higher than what you find in Canada, UK, and Australia. So the other part of this equation is, will the U.S. stay number one? Number one is obviously, we're number one, we all love to say that. Recent IDP survey in their latest version of Emerging Futures has the United States for the first time in several years on top as the policies, anti-immigrant policies of the UK, Canada, and Australia are putting students off interest in studying in those disciplines, in those areas. So we've got two ways. US is number one in terms of total numbers right now, but also number and future numbers potentially for eternity. You could see amongst prospective students, US has risen up to the number one preferred destination of students, according to this IDP survey, Emerging Future Survey, and 100,000 students, I think, from several different countries in around the world. I don't know the exact. Let's check the numbers there. It's in the article. 11,500 students from 117 countries were asked. So some really significant numbers there, and showing how the United States has certainly rebounded from the early years of the Trump administration, where there were certainly drops in the anti-immigrant rhetoric there. And now other countries, Australia, UK, Canada, are certainly experiencing that anti-immigrant piece, maybe not to the same extent that we had it in the US, but certainly when it comes to this latest report, we're back on top for the foreseeable future, in my estimation. So that is question number two. Now, the final question of the day is a little bit of a downer for my colleagues across the pond, many of which I'll be seeing in 3 weeks at NAFSA. But in terms of our dark days ahead for UK universities, Many of them will say privately that they're already here. And they're here because of the actions, as I was just alluding to in the last question answer about what government policies in other countries have done to kind of depress interest in studying in Canada, in Australia, and the UK. You've seen in the UK, there's been several events happening recently. We've talked about the potential threat to the graduate route visa. We've talked about the dependent study ban that was introduced. There are other things happening. There are talks I mentioned the UK study visa applications are down 27% in the last 2 years. So there's some real structural challenges to what international students are facing if they're looking at the UK as a study destination right now. So when it comes to examples of what we're talking about here, in addition to the study visa drops 27%, in addition to we now have employers like KPMG, one of the largest employers in the UK. They are canceling foreign graduate job offers after the UK government has tightened visa rules. So they've taken these steps because the government has kind of decided to cut record immigration numbers, net migration numbers. It's one of the big four, KPMG is one of the big four firms that they have canceled offers that they've already put out. So that's a pretty significant jump that some of the recent hires have now been refused jobs. And for the international students, that's devastating in terms of what their future might hold now. So, and the reason why is the government has increased the minimum salaries for international students, for skilled workers, from £26,200 to £38,700. For that's for skilled workers, and to £30,960 for people under the age of 26. So that's the typical first-year graduate salaries are between £25,000 and £35,000 in the UK. So those are ones that are now their lower-end hires are junior actuaries. The junior actuaries are exempt from this, at least for KPMG. But our overseas graduates who need skilled worker visas outside of London, that's another caveat there, are no longer going to be eligible for jobs. You also see at the university level, 50 plus universities, that's fully a third of the universities in the UK. It's about 150 universities in the UK. Fully a third of them are cutting jobs because of the drops in overseas students that they're seeing. As early as this past January, the impact is being felt already, that these academic job losses are coming because of the decrease in the number of students. You see, we saw in the UK, or we saw in the US post election of Donald Trump in November 2016, we saw the You Are Welcome Here campaign start in the US. And that was a specific reaction to the election of a president who was very anti-immigrant rhetoric and policies that he eventually implemented. Caused a reaction, and that was You Are Welcome Here. The UK in the early teens started a similar program called We Are International, and that kind of faded away in the last 5 years or so, but has now been relaunched to boost the welcome factor for the UK universities as a reaction to all the anti-immigrant policies that have been implemented by the government, to still show that their institutions are safe, that they are welcoming, that international students as a whole are welcome on their campuses. So these are the kinds of things that UK institutions are dealing with right now. And as you can imagine, it's a pretty daunting time if you're on that side of the desk in the UK to try and the government's actions certainly make their lives a lot harder as they try to kind of defend their institutions and defend the country and what they know is the country as a welcoming destination for international students. So it's a real shame, frankly, that it's come to this. But it's the reality that my colleagues in England are facing right now in terms of what they can do. And right now, you see what's happening. There's not necessarily a light at the end of the tunnel for the UK uni friends. They are hoping that the elections coming up at the end of 2024, beginning of 25, will sweep the Conservatives out of power and put in the Lib Dems or Labour Party that will have our coalition government that will be much more sympathetic to international students. So that's yet to be seen if that will happen, but certainly there's certainly that is their great hope. Much like in the U.S., we're feeling Trump 2.0 and what that might look like as an impact if the November elections go a certain way, what that might have for our industry. Maybe we're going to be resurrecting your welcome here. But still, these are a lot of what we're talking about. These are swings and roundabouts, as I say, across the pond for how we deal with the different world events and political climates in our countries that impact what we do. And certainly we're not immune to the kinds of challenges that governments face when bringing in students from overseas or having policies that either make it easier or harder for international students to enroll. So we'll see where it goes. We're not going to be eating crow. We may be eating crow in a while if it doesn't go our way in November. But certainly you see a lot of conflicts around the world within governments that are about immigration and about migration of peoples to their countries and what that impact has on the rest of the population, on jobs, on housing, on healthcare. All of these different areas are touched by migration and immigration in various ways. And international students are part of that equation and oftentimes get tarred with the wrong brush for some of the bad side of immigration that impacts some countries around the world. So that's all we have for you this week on the Midweek Roundup. Thanks again for making us a part of your weekly international edification. Certainly those watching on repeat on YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn, or Facebook, really appreciate you taking the time out of your week to watch us or listen to us. And again, the audio-only podcast version is available on all major podcast providers at searching Midweek Roundup. You'll find us there. Looking forward to chatting with you again soon for the next couple of weeks at the home office before doing a live at the end of the month from the NAFSA Expo Hall floor. Until then, we look forward to chatting again soon. Cheers.